We do a roll call. Okay, Ross Davis, excused. Bill Ray?
Here.
Yvonne Cruz, excused. Christina, excused. Dave Gippis?
Present.
Simon Ponder? Okay.
So we can't do minutes. We have any public comments? You want to make public comment?
No. Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. My name is Kim Whitehead, and I'm the Assistant City Manager for City of Ocala. And I apologize, it's taken me this long to get to a Recreation Parks Committee meeting, but I...
You've made one.
Yeah, it's been a while. So, I do appreciate everything you guys do for us, and anything we can do to help you, just let us know.
Do you all want to, have you already introduced yourselves to him before? Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
We know each other.
Okay. All right, you can be persons wishing to appear, too.
I wish to disappear.
Okay, unfinished business. I'll just run through this. Skate park, just to update you that we did get a, we did finalize the concept plan. And now we need to pull together a group of people that are going to help us with, hopefully help us with fundraising efforts. Mostly, first we're going to have an internal meeting with our PIO office. And I really had hoped to do this already, but I haven't had time because I've got other projects on my plate. But next, so she's going to, Katie at our PIO office is going to help prepare the collateral material that we will use to go out and sell this to the public. And our fundraising plan is basically to, we have a few grants we'll try to write. Really watching to see what happens with the FERDAP program this year. I would love it if the state would decide to fund some of the larger projects. If they would do that, then that would bode well. Then we'll put in an application for FERDAP in the fall. If they don't fund it this year, then it will probably still put in an application, but then the odds obviously aren't as good. If they don't fund that program, they still keep taking applications, they're just not funding it. So then we'll try to go after, you know, we'll try to identify and go after some large donors. And then after that, we'll go after the smaller donors. We don't want to roll out like a Kickstarter campaign or anything like that until we've identified a few larger donors, because otherwise you don't want to give them the opportunity to get it out of their system with a $100 donation.
Did we address if we're allowing branding?
Yeah. Yes, we will allow branding.
Okay. So for a major donor of Nike or whoever.
Sure. Yeah, do you have a rich uncle? We're looking for rich uncles. And I don't have any either.
I'm looking for something like Fox Sports or somebody like that.
Yeah. You know. So that's really it on the skate park at this time. Fort King National Historic Landmark, that one's moving a little more. We did get the state to approve the use of the archaeologists that we already have. The grant required us to go through a competitive bidding process unless we had an established relationship with an archaeologist that began with a bidding process. And so our archaeologist of record out there has had three projects with us that were paid projects. He volunteers all his time typically. But these larger research projects, we'll pay him, and this grant will reimburse us for that. So, but his initial projects with us were competitively bid, so they approved for us to use him without having to go through a process, which is really helpful for us because he maintains our artifact inventory, and it's a lot easier for him to just accession all that into the collection anyways. So, and then our procurement office approved that as well. So they're finalizing his contract, and then he should get going. I already gave him a letter of intent that he could use to start pulling the permits with the state so that he could begin that work. And working on a RFP, we're gonna put that fort reconstruction project out on a design build contract. instead of, we were going to put it out design and then put the construction out to bid, but what we've realized in talking to a lot of people is that there's a million ways to skin this cat. You won't find many experts on how to build an old wooden split log fort because not a lot of those get built anymore. So we have log home builders coming to us. It's amazing the ideas that people have. So we thought the best approach would be to do a design build, because then those people are going to come together and make their presentation together, and so then we'll pick the best approach through that process, as opposed to us trying to guide somebody in design, and we're really not experts in that either. So
do we have that, is there any, you know, historical type, you know, image or, you know,
rendering
that we're trying to follow? Yes. That says, okay, yep, you know, it's going to be vertical poles or it's going to be horizontal, you know?
Yeah, we do. We have, there was a rendering in a diary of one of the soldiers that was drawn by a man named John Sprague. And so, assuming that his depiction was, that he didn't take a lot of artistic license and that his mm-hmm. depiction was accurate, that's the only visual we have of it. The we don't have actual plans of this. We're building the second fort. You know, there were two forts
right
there, and we're building the second fort. We don't have any actual construction drawings of the second fort. We have a floor plan of the first fort, and everything we're reading in the diaries, when they're describing it, it appears that the second fort was built using the same plans as the first fort. We don't know that 100%, but we're making that assumption based on what we're reading.
Based on what you know, you've got to go in a direction.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is satisfying the state. The state feels like the documentation we're providing is leaning that, so that it's going to be authentic, because that's mm-hmm. what's important to them, that we're building it as soon. And there's a lot of things that go, you know, for example, when you split the logs, we believe this fort had, that the logs were split once, it's pine, and that they were split once, and that the inside was flat and the outside was rounded.
Mm-hmm.
Our fort did not have pickets at the top, and so a lot of debate going on in the group right now on whether to have pickets, mostly from a preservation standpoint, because if you have pickets, you're going to have less damage to your logs over time, because the water doesn't seep down into
right
it. So we really want to not have pickets, because we feel pretty strongly that our fort didn't have them. And so we're looking at just a slanted, so it's still not exactly what it was, but it'll look from the outside, so we'll slant it in. That's not as good as pickets, but it's better than just flat.
Can we seal it?
You can, and we will treat them.
Okay. Yeah.
So even with the best treatment, typically looking at about 15 years if you sink them. So we're looking at a system where we, almost like a privacy fence, where you only sink so many, right? So you'd have sections,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd only have so many that are sunk in the ground, and then the other ones will be a little bit off the ground. And so it's the ones that are sunk in the ground that we'll have to replace more often.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is whether or not to split them. They're debating that. We feel pretty strongly that ours were split. But if you don't split them, obviously once you get into the heart of the wood, then you're going to get more bugs and deterioration quicker. So there's a big debate on whether or not to split them. So,
are we going, you know, just come know me, I've had a diverse past. But we're looking at using pine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we're going to obtain, you know, find some of the guys that are still cutting big pine, and then, yeah.
Our guy that's the coordinator out at Fort King, he has a connection with somebody who has some pine wood.
Mm-hmm.
So that has, you know, that he's growing pines.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's a company that does it. So we're hoping to get at least some of that donated. But he's still working that. They have a grant program And it's a real simple, you know, kind of like letter-like grant, kind of like the Felburn Foundation grants. So he's looking at trying to get that wood donated. We did find somebody who will donate all the services for the land clearing we need with a one of those diamond cutters that comes in and just will cut the trees down right at ground level.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't, even the roots and stuff, pulling them out, we can't do that.
Yeah.
So...
I'm using one of those right now on another site down in Lake County, and it's a big old flywheel. It's about mm-hmm. that big around. It's thick metal. The blades come off. They're about this long. They come off to the side. It's got a set of hands that grab the tree, and then and the tree's gone. And you cut right.
And then they'll let us do a little bit of grinding in the area where the fort's going to be. We do want to grind that a little bit, and we can go about an inch and a half, 2 inches down, and then we can, any larger stumps that are there, and then we can treat that, and then we're going to cap the site. So we're going to put a couple feet of fill on top of that. We're trying to preserve the archaeological mm-hmm. resources, obviously. Mm-hmm. And the places where we have to put the posts in the ground, they will dig those.
The archaeologists dig the stumps there, make it authentic.
Well, and we are going to. We're going to grind them just a little and then treat that to try to make... We're more worried about the shoots that come up and, you know... And some of that will settle over time, but it's going to be a dirt floor.
Most
so
of that stuff
really
I do, you won't get what is called as coppicing. When it comes up from stumps, and most of those trees won't compass.
Then there's the... So I feel like we're making a lot of progress just in... Because that just working out that kind of stuff is extremely time-consuming, and we got a lot of people giving input. So, but I feel like we've really... They're really working on vetting all of that.
We come in and do it. Did one restoration of a site out in Washington, and if you do it, authentic seems to be the key. That where it doesn't look like a Disney World fort.
Right.
If it is something authentic that gives a reason to where it's different from other forts, like we were just talking with the placemaking,
mm-hmm.
it becomes a destination that people want to go see.
Yeah, and this won't be a pretty fort at all. They weren't pretty forts.
The more authentic it's...
Yeah. And then this organization, the Fort King Heritage Association, and I know you all are familiar with them, they're going to be going on a capital fundraising campaign to raise the money for this park, but we're going to build a National Park Service level visitor center at the site. So we're working up cost estimates right now. Jim Couillard at the county is kind of heading up that part of it based on the master plan, what that really looks like fund wise and so that group will raise the funds for it so that it won't be something that's funded through taxpayers. It'll be funded through private donations and grants. All right, the youth sports agreements, I had given you all a copy of a draft of that. I hadn't heard back from anyone, so I'm assuming either it's okay, or if you have comments, please send them to me. Haven't really had a whole lot of time to do anything, even if you had sent me comments. So, but we do probably need to start working on that again and just finalizing. I think I told you this, I kind of started running through it with Big Sun New Soccer just to see what is the impact, because they're going to have the biggest impact. Because the way we did it is we would take over the maintenance and all the routine maintenance. And then based on how often they use it, they would have a portion of the cost. Well, Big Sun is almost year round. So it's going to impact them the most. So I want to make sure we're not being unreasonable. Pricing our kids out of soccer. So they're the ones to test it on, because they're the ones that are going to take the biggest hit. So as soon as we finalize that guide, then I will start just drafting their agreement and what it looks like. And then I might have to tweak the guide based on what their numbers come out to.
On those agreements, do Big Sun or whoever's using the park, they have control over who gets to utilize that? For example, you know, you go to Kerrigan and it's locked. Kids can't go. And I understand why they do it, because there's the adult, I guess that semi-pro league. Some of those guys were
Is it the ball fields locked or the batting cages?
Batting cages and the field.
Yeah.
Because I've heard that from people, and I was like,
and
oh,
I
really?
Have too. And I meant to drive around because I had a complaint from someone recently, and I had told staff to open those fields. Now, they might lock the fields, but I prefer they not lock them during the season, just because they go out there and line fields and get them ready,
right,
and then somebody
right.
goes out there and plays on it. The batting cage, and so I want all the fields unlocked because and there's signs up there that say you can't use it for organized team purposes without a reservation. But when a dad and a kid want to go out and just hit a ball around, I want that. I think you should be able to
right.
do that. And so I'll check and make sure they're leaving those fields unlocked. Now, the batting cage is a different story because they were having a lot of vandalism
right.
in their batting cage. And
right.
so I
understood that, yeah.
why they needed to lock it.
What about, is that the same for like Tuscaloosa?
Should be for all the fields.
For all the city fields? Because I remember, you know, times coming out here when my kids were younger and going out to Tuscaloosa. And
yep, and we did.
Couldn't go. Yeah.
Yeah, we did it when my kids were growing up. So I'll circle back with staff and make sure that they're leaving them unlocked. And, you know, and I've told them there are times that they will need to lock them, but they should have a sign on there that says closed for maintenance so that somebody understands why it's locked and not just it's locked again. So I'll circle back with them and make sure they're leaving them unlocked.
MCYFL locked their...
MCYFL is different. So right now it's different. Okay, so there's two different scenarios. Right now, MCYFL has a lease agreement with us where they have exclusive use of that facility, except for the city can use the
right.
facility for our programs when MCYFL is not using it. Our city council in the past has made it clear that they expect other organizations to be able to use those facilities when MCYFL isn't using it. So, for example, lacrosse has used it, and that spring football program mm-hmm. that came last year used it. MCYFL was not receptive to that. They don't like it. They did it because we forced their hand, but they don't like it. You'll recall last year they involved an attorney, and so we involved our attorney. And it was one of the things that kind of pushed us into this, doing the research and mm-hmm. working into this sports guide policy, the sports policy. And to their credit, part of it is they pay all the maintenance expense out there. Mm-hmm. And so their attitude is, you're letting lacrosse play out here, and then, but we're having to pay the maintenance. Well, when, first of all, lacrosse pays MCYFL to use the facility, and they're using it at a time when we can't fix the damage from what happened with football, okay? Because football doesn't get over till November.
Right.
Bermuda grass is not growing again until end of March, beginning of April at best. And so the lacrosse starts in January, so that field hasn't healed from football anyways. So it's not like we've gone in and fixed the field all back up for MCYFL and they paid for that, and then we let it get destroyed. Mm-hmm. We don't really start fixing it back up until April anyways.
Right.
So that was our justification back to them, and we don't charge them anything extra. We have told them if the – and lacrosse is pretty hard on a field, and you think that football's the hardest, and, you know, you can see the wear patterns. Football's pretty much in the middle of the field, and lacrosse is at the goals,
yeah.
right? And soccer doesn't really cause that much damage. So when – we've told them if it's to the point where if there's so much damage to the field that we have to, we'll go in and put sod in, and lacrosse will pay for that. And so we have argued back every way we can, and the bottom line is they really just don't want to share it. So this year they allowed a football program to come out there, spring football, flag football, right, Irie? Was at MCYFL that was flag football. So they allowed them to come out there. Well, that was not run through us. They just gave them permission, and we just happened to hear about it because they needed the fields lined and stuff, and it's our guys that do that. And so we're like, wait a minute, guys. See, so when it runs through us, we're going to make sure they have their insurance in line and that they indemnify both MCYFL and us. When MCYFL's letting them do it, nobody's checking insurance
right,
and all that.
Right.
That's why we need a sports policy, so that... And MCYFL will make out on the deal. And there will still be an opportunity for them to have an agreement, a long-term agreement, because they've made a lot of capital investments in that facility, so we get that. And there will still be certain spaces that can be exclusive. So, for example, they raised and spent, they built those, that concession stand and the locker room and all of that. We get that.
Who owns the underlying land?
The taxpayers of the citizens of the city of Ocala.
Okay.
And so, and the property taxpayers of Marion County also helped to develop it through Pennies for Parks.
Okay.
So, but all of the capital improvement you see, they raised private funds for that. The
National parks were done that way.
Yeah.
A lot of the national park motels are built. Doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, so I feel like the city should be responsible for all the maintenance and all the management of them. And then when that sports program is going on, they have exclusive use of that facility while their program's going on, and they only pay for that. They shouldn't have to pay for the time that they're not using it.
Right.
And then any special services they ask for. So, like, for example, when MCYFL, you know, you're going to get a, we're going to maintain the grass, but when MCYFL is using it, they're going to pay for the cost of the trash pickup, the restroom cleanup, putting the lines on the field, and then the cost to operate the program. That's what's going to keep sports programs affordable for our citizens, because we have kids paying to mow grass, right? So we got MCYFL, their participants paying to mow the grass that their tax dollars already paid to mow. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So baseball and MCYFL football, they won't see a big hit. They won't necessarily like the policy, and that's where you all are going to come in. That's why it's important we have buy-in from this group, that this is the direction we want to go, because we will get a little pushback from them. But really, in terms of the financial hit, the ones who stand to take the biggest hit is Big Sun Youth Soccer. So we want to be careful that we're not putting them in a position where their kids can't afford to play soccer.
We can't have a situation also where we have a public resource that has been improved with private funds being operated by a private vendor, but then having that private vendor just assume the the ability to sublease that same venue as chosen without.
And we can't have that much public property consumed by an organization who literally plays ball there 10 times in a year.
Nope.
10 weeks they use that facility.
Out of 52.
And then have it sit with nothing else going. We just don't have that kind of parkland in the
nope.
city of
right.
Ocala that we can afford to have a facility like that sit vacant for 42 weeks
that's
out of
the
year.
That's what you say to the like, you know, Tuscaloosa being unlocked for a son and a child to go out there and play, but yeah, MCYFL's football field.
Right.
One of those 52 weeks that they're not playing.
Right.
A father and son can't go out there and utilize it.
It should be consistent. That field, you know, when you talk about a football complex, it gets a little trickier, and I know because we've seen some of the damage that we get
right.
sometimes out at ORS. You have to be careful how, you know, who you let in there, depending on what kind of oversight you have. There's the traffic right here is so much that if you go out there with your kid, there's 50 million people watching you. You could easily get into Gant and, you know,
oh,
people
yeah.
wouldn't necessarily even know you're there.
Right.
So into the football complex. So there's security issues too. But
I think you're right going with the approach of take back control of it, have a user fee. You know, a user-based fee associated with it, but with the understanding through our comp plan and the Parks and Rec element, we can't count that stuff as an LOS to meet our level of service if it's not used
right.
by the public.
Right. And so, just so you know, the county has asked for a copy of our guide. We're hoping that as we bring it to final form, they're hoping to adopt the same policy that so that we're consistent, because we get people, organizations that just play us against each other, and you know the county's cheaper right this minute than the city is, and so then we're at capacity at our fields, and we're going to the boss and saying we need more fields, and then next thing you know, everybody's gone out to the county and nobody's playing on our fields, and we've just built three new fields. And
that's happening at Rotary.
Yeah, it happens all over. Yeah. And so we're trying to have consistent policies so that we can really start to manage the resources in the community and know what we really need. I mean, we know just from a national standpoint, you know, if you look at the national standards, we don't have enough baseball fields. But right now, there's time. I mean, you can get into it. We're getting there, but we still have space for people to use our baseball field. So we're not really over capacity, but if you look at our numbers and our plan, and that's because right now it's cheaper to go out to the county, so they're out at the county. So we're really looking at being across the board consistent so that we can stop these organizations playing this that way, and really it'll help us to better plan what we need. So, Thompson's Bowl, you want to talk about this, Irie?
Yes, I can. Okay, so the city manager asked us about possibly renaming the Thompson Bowl. So, West Revitalization Committee and the Ponceana Heights Neighborhood Committee is working together to come up with a name. So what we did, we put together an application that has criteria. And so if you, a John Doe citizen, want to nominate somebody for, to say that the Thompson Bowl ought to be named after you, or let me stick with one thing at a time. With that, then we need a justification. Why do you think this person? Mm-hmm. So we put together some criteria. They must live in Ocala for 10 years plus. They must this, that, and the other. So we have a criteria sheet. So the members was thinking like this. Okay, if you name Thompson Bowl after one individual, that's just only one somebody being recognized. So they say, well, why not maybe name the trail, or have a designated area in there, like every year you can honor somebody in the community that have did outstanding service. Plus, you can get new people out there doing that dedication to see the park. Then maybe they will come into the park more frequently. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're working to get that done. We'd like to have the information back. We asked them to have it back to us by March 31st so that we can select a committee out of the community, different organizations, not Governors West and Ponceta Hikes, but other different organizations can be a part of breaking down and saying, okay, these six people here meet our criteria. Let's look at them closer. What, you know, which ones we gonna name the park after, or maybe name the trail after, or what we call, we said Legends Park. Let's just use that terminology. Mm-hmm. So now you got maybe 50 legends, but we only gonna select like one or two a year. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know it does that. So we're hoping by the end of this month to get all those different applications back. We have it on Governor's West Facebook page, the application and stuff, so they can go on there and get that. And the committee will meet. We'll make a determination of how many, and then we'll break it down and go from there.
Quick feedback, pencilizing. I like the idea of having how you can constantly revise and honor new people, because then that has the ability to expand. That, you know, the community may realize they need somebody to honor right away for something that somebody just did, and you can do it. And like you said, that just comes up. I like, you know, Community Honor Park, Legends Park, whatever, and then that takes away that, you know, individual focus on getting the right name and the right people. Where I've seen it named after people, it's usually because they donated the land for the park, mm-hmm. or the family or somebody else. But being able to come up with this and say, we want to honor the community, and then you can have different vignettes
right
within the community that you float names around and realize that that area is not one person.
Right, right.
You know, it's a multitude of them, and you can just rotate them around.
And so when it comes, when they finalize their recommendation, it'll come back here for you all to bless it, and then we'll advance it to City Council.
I think we just I mean, even amongst our board ourselves, you know, whether it's Legends, Honor, something, you need that hook name.
Right.
That hook.
Right. So we're working diligently to make that happen.
Yeah.
And our goal is to bring something to, we're wanting to finalize the process by June.
Yes.
So if their deadline's March, then hopefully the committee that's going to come together in April can finalize their recommendation. We can bring that back to you all then in May and take it to council in June.
Yeah, we got to close 30 days, whatever, to get on the agenda.
Yep. And then for that. All right, I'll give the Parks Operations and Special Services reports. We're still trying to hire a Parks Division head. We did close that position and we had close to 60 qualified applicants after I rejected the ones that really didn't meet the requirements. There were a few, about 20 of those. So, and I had the team each recommend the ones they wanted to interview, and then I married those lists up to see which ones were common, and we're going to interview a total of 15 people. So I feel good about the applicants. We're two whole days it's going to take us, but I'd rather meet more people than know that we're getting a person with the right fit. So I don't know if I'll have it done and be through the process to have that person here for the next meeting, but the one after that, hopefully you'll be meeting a new Parks Division head. And Special Services, you have your collateral material I think she handed out to you. On that front, it should have some of the events and programs going on. I think the sculpture stroll is the, that's not tonight, is it? Good grief. That stuff will just sneak right up on you. It's coming up. And then we have, just a reminder that it is the Tuscola Centennial Celebration this year. So we're kind of theming all these events around that.
Sculpture Fair is 1-4.
So, when?
The sculpture affair, when they stroll through and everything on the boat.
Okay, when is that one?
1-4 on Saturday, the 12th.
This Saturday?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
12th.
Don't miss it. Some beautiful sculptures out there if you haven't seen them already. Some real good stuff. And the art park is continuing. It's really, really starting to shape up. You can see now that sidewalks are poured. They're working on the brick plazas now. And I'm telling you, you've never seen so much thought and effort go into a park. These arts people are serious. So the guy that's doing the stone work, he is actually an artisan. They got all that stone donated. And I mean, we've had stone donated from multiple sources. And I mean, you literally got to look through it. And some sources were just, the whole source was rejected because it wasn't the right colors. And then when they finally found a source, they literally went out there with a crew of guys and the artisan himself and our cultural arts manager. And every piece had to be analyzed. And I'm talking, you see how big, you got to drive by it when you leave. That wall is long and that arch is big to be individually picking every piece of rock, but they did. And so, and then same with the brick pavers, just listening to Melissa. If she ever comes after you, run, because you will give her everything she wants before she's done with you. She is just that persistent. But the pavers, you know, there was this color pavers or this color, and she really wanted both. And so she, listening to her negotiate with the contractor, and he says, you can have both. I'm just not guaranteeing that my guy is going to pick some from here and then some from here and some from here and some from here. And she says, I will come out there and I will lay it in front of him in the right order. So they got done with all that. She's getting both, and it's sure going to be beautiful. So that's what's coming next. The sign itself will be a monument sign. It'll be a piece of work. She's the same guy that's doing the stonework will develop the border of the sign in that stone. And then she's got an artist who is doing a glass mosaic You've seen the, you've probably by now, I don't know if you'll remember it, but you've seen the Art Park logo. It's like, it's almost like paintbrushes that look like trees. And it's in the pastel mm-hmm. colors that we use in our branding. So an artist is going to do a glass tile mosaic of that into the sign. So it's coming along. Got a new sculpture at Citizen Circle. And community events coming up. We have IEGO, Earth Fest
Arbor
Day.
April 23rd.
Great Outdoors, come out for that. And then we are having a, we'll have a grand opening of the art park in the fall. And then we'll also have a centennial celebration in October. Oh, when does it say on your little thing here? When the Jazz on the Green, new event in Tuscola, used to be out at Jumble Air, then it was at Silver Springs. They were looking for a new home. When is it?
April 2nd.
April 2nd. That will be a phenomenal event. So come out. It is part of our downtown, Feel Downtown Live concert series, but it's actually coordinated by an outside event coordinator. So we're really excited about having them call Tuscola Park home, because that's exactly what we were looking for, is those higher quality events that we can start to form new traditions. That, you know, FAFO had kind of moved around a while, but traditionally they were in downtown Ocala, and then they went to McPherson for a few years. We're grateful to have them back, and that celebrates the past, but we're looking at the new traditions that we can start to form, and we need those signature events for Tuscola Park. And then the symphony, that building is, they've taken off to a point where it's a pain, but that's a great problem to have.
I've got one group that's trying to actually book in there to where there, it's a group out of the Claremont area, but they're, Cuban jazz, mm-hmm. South Florida influence, Latin jazz, but it's also, dance, swing, shag, whatever you want to call it. They're like the band in America that does it, so it has that kind of big band feel with it. But it's a cool thing. Gosh, we want to get in, and you find out that, they're getting close to being booked.
Yeah, they're booking fast. I don't even know how they're managing it all. I really don't.
Great venue.
It's a lot. It really is.
Shows you what a deficit there was.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's what's cool. Everyone said, well, gosh, we don't know if we should spend that money to do that. We don't know if people will come out. It just shows what our kids have been telling us all along, and that is there is freaking nothing to do. And it's a huge deficit.
Yeah. All right, Ari.
Okay. We just completed our Junior Magic Basketballs League. The youth that participated in that league and some of their parents will be going down to the Cedar Orlando Magic play, and I think they are playing Houston. But they will be going out, and if I'm not mistaken, it's like March 30th or the 31st that they will be going down to Orlando and see the Magic play. I'll be glad when the Magic get back up on that high scale again.
Get good?
Yeah. But the program went well. We had a great turnout for its parents and kids coming out. You know, it's always a struggle trying to get parents to be coaches. You know, they like to sit down and enjoy the kids, you know. But, you know, we struggle with that, but we're trying to get there. Also, we are gearing up for the summer. You know, I mean, it's showtime, if y'all understand where I'm going with that. We're prepping the pools, getting them painted up, and, getting the chairs and things of that nature. We're getting all the repairs done. We're getting ready. April the 2nd, we will start our first lifeguard class. Then we will have a water safety instructors class, so that we have teachers to teach our learning to swim. Those things are just, just coming up on us real fast. Also, we have some specialty programs that we do, like tennis and sticks for kids, golf and archery. And those things don't really take on to some of the the minority youth and all. So one of the things that we thought that we would do is kind of incorporate some of that into our summer camp to introduce them to like tennis. You know, we partner with Jason over at the Jason Weiss over at the Fort King Tennis Center. He come out and he do free classes for us, and we get those kids try to get them hooked on tennis outdoors, hooked on archery, hooked on sticks for kids, golf,
yeah.
You know, those type things. So we have those things that we see in the foreseeable future. Also, we are hiring a recreation program supervisor. I got that position out there, and I think I got about 12 applicants thus far for that already. It's like a little bit in a week old. I know I forgot something, but I'll tell you like this. March 19th, Community Garden. We will do a plant and build 25 new beds on March 19th from 9 to 1, 2200 West Highway 40. We can utilize all the volunteers we can get. We had a great time the very first time, January 9th, and we look for that to happen again. And you can go on our Facebook page and see, you know, evidence of the garden. I mean, it's beautiful.
What's the Facebook page?
What is it?
Yeah.
It's West O'Keller Wellness Community Garden.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's really it.
West O'Keller Wellness Community Wellness. Garden.
Well, garden.
Bingo.
It really do look nice. Broccoli. We have kale.
Mm-hmm.
How do you say it? Kale?
Kale.
We crop some radishes. I mean, you probably see them in those pictures. But those actually came out of our garden, and we're very, very proud of it. Yesterday, we had 11 youth between the age of 18 and 24 that came from Florida Atlantic University and built the compost bins for us yesterday. Under the tutelage of Mr. McDonald, a gentleman out of Silver Spring, that he just loved playing. In. Yeah. So, you know, it is good because the garden is for families and citizens, and, you know, we live in a food desert over there. And it's really a nice activity. You can go down that road pretty much any day and see somebody out there doing something on their garden, and it's neat.
My wife's already liked your page.
Yeah.
You gotta keep up with her somehow.
Yeah, she was director of Ag in the Classroom for Florida, and so it doesn't. And her and Ebony are good friends, so it's not surprising. It doesn't surprise me, but it's good.
Right.
Good stuff.
And just to share with you, we tried something. You know, like in the mornings, for instance, some of our facilities is not being used, so we tried an indoor pickleball. Mm-hmm. Over at the Krosky Center. And so the staff already be there. So we've had up to about 7 people to come in and participate thus far. And they come on a pretty frequent basis, Tuesdays and Friday mornings. You know, it's something we are trying. People asked us about pickleball and stuff, so we are trying it, you know, and we'll see where it grows.
Pretty popular.
Yeah, real popular. Matter of fact, in the villages, they said they're so tired of listening to pickleball bouncing.
Yeah.
It's the pickleball is more popular down there than tennis. Yeah. And they have, for senior sports nationwide, it's one of the, you know, it's just not one of our,
yeah.
It's not basketball, it's not football, it's not baseball.
Well, it's a slower game.
Yeah,
you know, you play with a wooden pellet, you play with a ball like a wiffle ball,
yeah.
So that they don't have to try to run, 25 miles an hour. They can run 1.5,
yeah.
And maybe get there in time. You know what I mean? Yeah, but they're out active and engaged, and that's what's important. I think I will stop there.
Comments by board members.
Milo, what I wanted to follow up on was just wondering how the garden was going. He answered those questions. And so That's good.
Yeah, we are at the stage now between now, well, really between now and next Friday, we got the crop.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's spring, you know, it's spring, and you. And if you go down there, there's four or five people that really knew what they was doing, okay?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, Nelsons. Yeah,
the Nelsons for one. I mean, the cabbage and the greens and stuff. I mean, standing up there, you know, really.
And watching it, like you were saying, you start building those anchors and traditions within your community. And then they start developing, they become that tradition. Well, I showed you that picture that one time when we first did one. It was a community garden that started in a power line right away with maybe five raised beds. And I looked at it from the air this year, and it's now taken over to where it's not raised beds anymore. It's acres that it's come into. And now they've had to add parking areas. And they said, no, we want people to walk to this garden. And so you got a whole regional trail that comes through the garden. And you got people out there gardening, and you got the joggers and the bikers and stuff going through it. And it's a great thing.
It all started with a few.
You just got to start doing it and get out of the way. Like you said, Kathy, you know, look, here's you, get out of the way. Let people do great things.
Well, so far they're enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I got right now, I think I got 12 people that have paid for a spot on the 25 beds. But see, we had donation of like 10 beds. And so we have to leave space for that so that people that come up that don't have the money, the $10, they can do a bed because we have that fund.
How far does a $100 donation go?
10 beds.
It costs $10. Okay, let me put it this way. It costs $10 to rent a bed for the year. It costs
$75.
$75 for us to build one and get the soil put in it. But we've had a lot of sponsorships and partners that have helped to pay for that part of it. So we weren't necessarily looking to recoup that $75 cost. We were looking to get buy-in. You know, you pay your $10 and then you own this little, you got this little plot for the year.
So if we come in, like you said, with the families that want to be involved, but they don't have the ability to come up and, you know, whatever the fee is, if someone came in as a sponsor and said, here's $100 to go to Kitty,
right,
you know, go scholarship that out to this.
Right. It was just like last time on January 9th. We're out, man, everybody working. I mean, I'm serious. We had probably 100 people there, Kathy. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, you know, people carrying bags here, people doing this. And it was just beautiful, right? And so up comes the gentleman that he can't garden. He don't want to garden, but he want to help somebody garden. There's a $100 check. There's a $50 check, you know. So it's been great,
mm-hmm.
You know. And I met someone that's supposed to be going to be an officer at Monroe. And you know, Monroe has that pot of money that they did grants
right
recently. And you know, they done slowed down giving because they looked at it and saw that the Dow Jones ain't where they wanted to be. But the bottom line is this. He shared with me, he said, Ira, he said, I'm going to see that we get some of that money. We got to get a little of that money for this. This is just what it's all about. See, they have four things that they want to work on. You know, diseases, health. I can't name the four things. But the bottom line is, what we are doing is what it's all about.
Yeah.
With the garden. And he want to try to help get some money to put into the garden. And that would be a good thing. Can it be a good thing, man, if we can get that piece of property? It's going to be prime property one day.
There is... most, when we do community surveys across the board, the most valuable pieces of property within any community for redevelopment is the park. When they look at the value that the park brings to the community, it's irreplaceable. I mean, look how valuable Central Park is in New York.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Now take Central Park out of New York. Now how valuable was
right.
it?
Right.
You can't ever replace it. Yeah. So, yeah, it's valuable. Let's make it valuable to the whole community
right.
and not valuable to one project.
Right.
You know, we got plenty of projects. I love making new ones. That's my business. But, you know, these things that are places, if we can focus on making places within the community, that will enhance the entire community.
Right. Have you seen the lambs out eating the grass?
The what?
The lambs out at the park eating the grass.
Mm-mm.
You ain't seen them? Right by there. Yeah. You'll see them.
You're so not right. Yeah.
There's a couple of them out there.
I got in a big fight with Groveland, finally told them they had written a city ordinance where you can't have agricultural activities within the city. And, you know, we had to go back. One, it's against state law, you can't do that. And then to make them realize, what really are you banning? You know, what are you eliminating? They were eliminating, you know, community gardens. Mm-hmm. You know, they said, well, we don't want to eliminate flowers. I said, no, I'm talking about a garden. You know, you just eliminate it.
Yeah, when you look at it, the reality is these little boxes, most people have room for that little box in their own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost is not so much that you can't really afford to do it. I mean, you can do it, right? Most people could do that. It's about, the reason people love community gardens is it is about being able to socialize. It's a social opportunity and being able to connect with your neighbors, and you go out there and you have conversation, and so it really is, that's the power of the community garden. It's great that you get fresh vegetables out of it, but it's the social part of it.
It's the interaction place. It's the place.
I mean, you go to places like Tioga Town outside of Gainesville, and they have a great community garden there. You know, every one of those people has room to put that garden and the resources to put in their own backyard.
You understand what you said first. You go to a great place like Tioga.
Right.
You go to places, and nationwide, the whole, we're realizing in this profession, we've been creating towns, cities, blocks, redevelopment districts, CRAs, CDDs, you know, use of Tiger funds, everything else. We've not been building places.
Right. And you know, I can't remember the name of the guy, but the guy that was the mastermind behind Tioga Town, we have had lots of conversation about that same thing and why they have a community garden as opposed to it being in people's backyards. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
So, David, do you have anything else? Okay, well, y'all want to adjourn this non-meeting?
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion moved.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you coming out.
No, it's good. Let me check real quick, Irene, see if I've got my checkbook in the car.
Okay.
Go home.